You're listening to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor, powered by bbbgive.org. Here, we explore the motivations that form the basis of giving and service. We inspire generosity and celebrate the transformative effects that giving and service have on the human spirit and on community. The conversations featured on the podcast also uncover giving strategies that educate and provide tools to help listeners make impactful gifts of both their time and money. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast, powered by bbbgive.org. Give.org is the nation's standards-based charity evaluator and your one-stop source for information on giving and reports on the most asked-about charities. I'm Art Taylor, your host. And today we're going to talk about small acts of generosity. We talk a lot about changing the world and doing things that are of a massive scale that affect lots of people. And that's really important, obviously. You know, we want to see change on a massive scale. But sometimes it's okay to do something about a problem that's staring you in the face. There's no big organization that's supporting it. It's just an individual, usually, or two, who look at something and say, you know, I can do something. It may not be for a lot of people, but I can do something for one or a few people, and I'm just going to do it. And I really wanted to hold that spirit up. I wanted to hold that notion up so that others who think that, you know, I can't have this massive impact, so I'm not going to do anything, will think differently about that. You can do it by working with an organization, doing a little bit through an existing organization, or you could try to do something on your own. It's really about generosity, and we can make a big difference sometimes just by helping one person, two people, maybe a handful of people, whatever we can. So today we're going to talk with three such people. One person is a professional basketball player who woke up one day realizing that there were people hungry on the streets and decided that it would be a good thing to do just to hand out a pizza to someone who needed something to eat. And we're going to learn more about where that led. Another gentleman is a software engineer who is doing quite well in the field, but had to learn a lot. And now he's trying to share what he's learned with others. So he's decided, I'm just going to mentor a couple of people because I know how hard it is to break into this field in certain cases. So he just decided to mentor a couple of people. And we're going to find out what that not only meant for the people who are being mentored, but for him as an individual, what it's done for him to just mentor some folk. And we're also going to speak with a young woman who's managing a program in El Salvador that provides access to swimming pools for young people who want to become great swimmers. And we're going to have along with her a woman who is a colleague of mine who grew up in El Salvador and became sort of a national hero because of her ability to swim. And she's going to vouch for the quality of what was created in El Salvador by this small act of generosity. So we're going to get into it. We're going to talk with these three individuals, well, four in total, who are going to talk with us about what motivated them to just take a small act and do something, do a small act of generosity and try to make a difference in maybe one, two, or a handful of lives. Now, I believe what they're going to find out is you do these works and people take notice, and what becomes a small act can very quickly become something much larger, but we'll see. It's still early for us to know how big these things will become. But today, let's just talk about the small act of generosity. Well, Gerard, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Oh, well, thanks for having me.
We decided to do this episode, as you know, on small acts of kindness and how they have an effect not only on the people who are being helped, but to some extent for the helper. They do different positive things for the person who's offering that generosity. And I became aware of an event or an opportunity that you put out, and I just wanted to talk to you about it. Pretty straightforward opportunity that you offered, and it seems that quite a few people have taken you up on it. But before we get to that, tell me a little bit about you and your background.
So by trade, I graduated with my BS in aerospace engineering in 2014. And then I was at Sikorsky Helicopter for about 3 years. And then during that time, I was getting my master's in computer science. And once I finished that, I started at Intel. I was at Intel for 2 years. And after I left there, I joined Twitter. I've been at Twitter for about a year and a half. So I had a little bit of a roundabout way to get to coding.
So you are what's known as a coder. And I understand you just got a promotion at Twitter.
Yeah. It was a little expected, unexpected. I don't know how to describe it, but it's a really exciting thing.
Now, as an African-American, you are probably somewhat of a rarity, I understand, in your profession. How has it been for you breaking into the profession of, I guess, coding and computer science?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I never felt that joining software engineering or becoming a software engineer would be any different than my aerospace education. In my classes in undergrad, I was maybe one of five Black engineers in my discipline. So in aerospace specifically, there were more Black engineers throughout Maryland. But so taking that experience, I found that it's just very similar. There's just not a whole lot of representation across engineering in general. So coming into software, it was just more of the same. That being said, I definitely was very choosy about where I wanted to go in terms of what are the D&I initiatives at, say, Intel and at Twitter, and making sure that, you know, I set myself up for as much success with as little representation as possible. So that's kind of been my experience so far.
Have you noticed any particular barriers?
I haven't, personally. I think one of the most challenging things is not being able to commiserate or speak with other people like me, or work with other people like me, other Black engineers. So that's been kind of challenging. But that being said, I don't feel like that is a barrier. I think it's more just needing to be flexible in terms of your cultural background, I guess.
So you have been working in this space now for several years, and I'm reading that you have decided to do some mentoring. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to know a little bit about what drove you to become a mentor, how that's going, and what you expect to accomplish with it.
Okay. So let's take a step back and talk about, you know, my journey to software, right? So I was getting my master's in computer science. It took me about 2.5 years, and I got it online at Johns Hopkins. So I never actually set foot on the campus, but basically what that meant was I was taking classes, and largely I was on my own, and my ability to complete assignments and do all those things. And that was very difficult. And a lot of my family didn't necessarily have the background, so I kind of had to reach out to individuals and ask for informational interviews about, you know, what to expect in interview processes and all that kind of stuff. So it's a lot of trial and error. And ultimately it ended up paying off, but I had to be very hyper-focused. So anyway, so let's fast forward to Twitter. So when you join the company, you have to create a Twitter account. So I created one, or I had one that I revived, and I became very active in the dev community. And so I started to notice that there's tons of people who are trying to teach themselves how to code, how to write software, become software engineers, or make a career change and all that kind of stuff. And ultimately, it came down to the fact that I made a realization that becoming a software engineer changed the trajectory of my life in various ways. And I'm finally at a point where I feel like I've met a lot of my goals, and I have the bandwidth to help other people reach their goals as well. So that kind of is what prompted me to announce this mentorship program. I didn't expect it to blow up as much as it did and get as many responses as it did, but it was a happy thing to see. And then ultimately, I picked 3 mentees, and we meet every week. We talk over chat just to make sure that they're progressing towards their goals, and I answer any technical questions that they might have, or career questions, or plan, have a roadmap for what their goals are and when they want to reach them, and we kind of are going through that whole process. So that's been great. And as far as what I seek to get out of it, I just want to see them succeed, honestly. I get a lot out of having to teach the lower level concepts, the early concepts, to folks who have never written a line of code before. And that is something that I actually get a fair amount out of. It helps me refine my understanding even more. I'm a firm believer that the best way to learn something is to actually teach it. And I found that my mentees ask me questions and I don't actually know the answer, so it forces me to actually go and look up the answer and ultimately give them the answer. So
Gerard, you put out an offer on Twitter and got quite a bit of uptake from that offer. Why don't you tell the audience about what happened there and what you're doing now as a result?
It's interesting. So I put out the offer for 2 to 3 mentees. You didn't have to know how to code, or, you know, some coding experience is great. I put like a few constraints on the time zone, and I asked folks to upload a video of their why or their pitch as to why they would want to be my mentee. And yeah, I just put out a tweet thread, and I didn't really expect it to blow up as much as it did, but it turns out that the dev community is really, really responsive to folks who give things away for free. And they're very much a positive community. So if tons of folks are trying to learn software and change their careers and everything, so any resources that pop up on Twitter, you find that people start to retweet, especially if they find it a good resource. That's basically what happened. I have a couple of folks who I'm mutuals with on Twitter that have very large followings, are very active in the dev community. And they retweeted it and it reached a lot of folks, and then it kind of just snowballed from there. So it was very interesting to see how that works.
And you got how many responses from Twitter on this thing?
I don't have it in front of me, but I think it was something around close to 2,000 likes, maybe 500 or so retweets, and about the same amount of comments. Yeah, so it was a pretty, as viral goes on Twitter, it was relatively small, but for my personal account, that was more than I've ever gotten. So
that's quite amazing. And you also have a YouTube page where you give away information on coding and a career in coding, right? How's that doing?
Yeah, so my YouTube channel, at the beginning of COVID, I set out to grow my channel to over 1,000 subscribers. Since then, I'm over 2,000 at this point, over 2,100. I put out videos on software development, software career questions, and stuff like that. And largely, it's for me to... I create videos, especially technical videos, on topics that I'm interested in. So I'll read up on some new technology and software and web development or something like that, and I'll implement it on my own, and then I'll just create a video. So it's, again, it goes back to allowing me to teach something, which helps me learn something a little bit better than otherwise I would have.
Well, apparently you're teaching a lot of other people too, if that many people are subscribing to your channel. And I just think that is kind of a unique way or unique approach to giving something back. A lot of times people want to start organizations, and we certainly understand why they do that. It's to make sure that you can do something in a structured and institutionalized way over a long period of time. But sometimes we just want to reach out and help some people. You know, we just want to do something, and we don't have any longer term, you know, aspirations for what might happen. It's just, let's just do something and see if anybody can get value out of it. And it seems that that's what you've done. So now that you've done this and you have these mentees and you're probably learning more about how to be a mentor, you have all these videos out. Do you see potentially creating some type of organized approach to this in the future?
I've given it a little thought. Not very much. It's definitely something I'd be interested in doing. It's a lot of work, and I can't do it alone. So I'd have to bring some people on board to kind of help out with the creation of this organization and create the content, create all that sort of stuff. So, and that being said, I also have a day job and a family. So it's definitely on the back burner, but it is something that can be done. As an example, there's this website called freecodecamp.org, which is a website that allows you to self teach yourself at your own pace. And a lot of folks who are learning to code use that as their first foray into software development. So and they're a .org.
Yeah, that's quite fascinating too. So in all, I think you're out there to just help some folk, and it looks like, you know, other people are really interested in taking you up on that offer for sure. But again, to me, this is how people are finding ways to give something back. Now, how are you balancing all this with your family obligations?
It's been challenging. So I put out the announcement for the mentees back in March, or maybe it was February. I can't remember the exact date. And I gave it 30 days for applicants to apply. And then I chose at the beginning of April. And then my son was born on April 16th. So I had a couple of weeks there where I could allocate some time to get things going. But recently it's been challenging to dedicate at least an hour. Like I promised an hour a week to each mentee to prepare programming. And it's just been hard to get that dedicated hour to give them. But that being said, they've been very flexible, very accommodating, and we sync a lot offline. So they'll just send me their questions, send me screenshots of their code, and I usually can fix their code or help them with what they're stuck on asynchronously, which has been nice considering the pair programming is really what they get a lot out of that. So this is a nice fallback.
Well, Gerard, this is great. And I just want to congratulate you for taking this on. I know it's challenging for you to manage all this with a career and a family. But as you said, people are getting value out of this, both your time that you're spending as a mentor and your video program on YouTube that gives people insight into the career of coding. So I just want to hold this up as an example of what you can do, of what people can do to support others, whether that be in your career or some area of interest or hobby that you have that can drive other people to achieve more in their lives. So Gerard, I just want to thank you for what you're doing and thank you for joining the Heart of Giving podcast.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
Kai Howard, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Well, Kai, I want to get into your background a little bit, but you're involved in something that really caught my attention. Somehow you got this desire to support people who are homeless and who are without food. And you came up with this really interesting approach to providing something to help them out, which we're going to get into. But before we do, tell me a little bit about your background so that our audience can get to know you a bit.
Okay. Kai Howard. I am from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, born and raised. Went to the Shipley School in Bryn Mawr. After that, did a year of postgraduate at St. Thomas More. Graduated from New Jersey Institute of Technology. I come from a basketball bloodline, to say. My father, Maurice Howard, played at the University of Maryland and played a stint in the NBA, as well as my brother, Ashley Howard, who is the head coach now over at LaSalle University. Spent some time underneath Jay Wright in the national championship teams over at Villanova. Played basketball in the G League for a stint, played overseas for a little bit, and now I am currently taking the coaching route and being a mentor to the youth and trying to be more of a good guy for the youth in the inner city.
That's wonderful, Kai. And you did mention your family is quite a basketball family, basketball heritage. I know your family quite well and the history. And what's so interesting to me is that your family also is one that is deeply embedded in giving back to our society. And you are now on break from playing basketball in Europe. And somehow you decide that you want to now help people who are homeless because they don't have anything to eat. Where did this come from, Kai?
I want to say that it originally started with all the extra time I get overseas and being able to self-reflect and think about my own life, even though I've only been in this world for 27 years now, just counting my blessings and the opportunities that were given to me and placed in front of me, and realizing that the world is so much bigger than what we think it is. So myself and my cousin one day on a Friday night, we just had a deep conversation. We're just celebrating life. Not anything specific, but the fact that we're still here. We're still living. That next day, I woke up. I found some extra change in my pocket. It was a beautiful day out. And I just figured I would go buy some pizzas and give it to a couple homeless people. And just off the how quickly I was able to move those first couple boxes of pizza and seeing their faces and seeing legit how hungry they were. Your average person every day gets excited about a new job or a raise in their department, where these people were just excited to see a hot meal. And from that point on, I pretty much put that burden on my back to try and figure out a way to change that.
So Kai, that first week you just started taking a few dollars out of your pocket and giving this to buying pizza and distributing pizza to basically people who you saw on the street. Now, all of a sudden, you get others to sort of join in. How did that come about?
It started with a couple posts online. It was more so me just going into certain places, Domino's, just showing the images of all the boxes of pizzas in my car to get somebody to understand this is in an era where a lot of people do things to scam and get money. This was not that at all. I tried to stay as far away from as possible getting images of the people in need, because in my own opinion, it's disrespectful to put those people in front of the camera without their permission, as well as I don't want this to seem as if I'm doing it for likes or approval or acceptance from anybody. This is something that means a lot to me. It's near and dear to my heart, and I just want this to stay authentic and genuine. So I just started reaching out, telling people my mission. People bought into it. I want to say I'm thankful for my father being my father and the impact he has in the community. It made it easier for me to reach out to people and understand, oh, well, he comes from a bloodline of giving back to the community. So he's not doing anything wrong with this money. This money's going to a great place. And from there, it just kind of took off itself.
So how often now are you able to distribute pizza? And where do you see this potentially going, Kai?
I try to do it about 2 times a week, depending on the weather. As we know, when it's rain, cold out, people need to look for a place to lay their heads at night, protect themselves. So I try to look at the weather at peak days as to where I could order pizzas. Then I'll just drive around the city. Maybe it'll be just myself for the most part, or I bring my cousin along, and that's how we do it. Honestly, I never put a ceiling on this because, again, it was just a natural thought I had one day. And the impact I seen in a few people the first go around kind of made me more determined to make that impact across the board for the long run. I hope and pray this becomes something that makes a necessary change in the city of Philadelphia, because I genuinely feel that nobody should ever go to sleep at night hungry. And it's so easy as a box of pizza, which is about $8 a box. So I just wanted to make an impact and open the eyes up to the community and in the rest of the world, because I know this issue is just not an issue in Philadelphia. It's everywhere, worldwide. I just wanted to make this a known issue as we're trying to attack so many issues in this world at this point in time. This is something that's been going on and will continue to go on unless we make a change. So I hope one day I'm able to have the backing to really, really make a change day in and day out.
So as a basketball player and growing up in a basketball family, as you mentioned, your objectives have always been pretty straight, right? You wanted to play well in high school. You wanted to then get a career going in college, get a scholarship and play in college, and then ultimately maybe play professionally, right? So you weren't thinking about how you might help homeless people or how you might give something away, but yet somehow this leaks into your consciousness that you want to veer off a little bit from the focus that you have to have on playing and getting better to wanting to give back. And I want to just ask you, where do you think that comes from? Because, you know, obviously there are lots of people who have careers who are very focused, who are very driven to succeed in their careers, and they'll have a lot of time to be thinking about giving anything back. But yet you did. And not only did you think about it, you acted on it. Because a lot of times we'll think about things, but we won't actually do anything about it because we think, oh, there's no way I can do it. You didn't have a grand plan, it doesn't seem in mind. You just wanted to help a few people, right? And so, but where does this come from, Kai? How did you not only think about it, but what made you say, I need to act on this? And if you had to inspire others to do likewise, what would you tell them?
What really made me act on this was growing up, my father always told me that basketball was a privilege. It's not something that you wake up in the day and think you deserve. You must work for it. So in order to really be good at it, there were certain things I had to make sure I did. I had to be respectful day in and day out. I had to treat others the way I wanted to be treated. Go to school, pay attention. So in the long run, that told me that if I wanted to be good at this privilege, I would have to perfect my craft and put a lot of time and work into my craft. So now the young kid that became a young adult that got to live out his dream and sit back and see that all the hard work he put in and the sacrifice he put in finally showed, I feel like I was my own version of success. And within the route of success I took, at points in times, I felt I was extremely selfish. Sacrifices my family made, the sacrifices my siblings made, my loved ones made, just so I could live out my dream. And in the mix of my journey, I never stopped to think about how blessed I was for parents to make sacrifices for me, for my siblings and brothers to make, my brother and sister to make sacrifices for me, for my loved ones, my family that dealt with me throughout my highs and lows. So being able to finally sit back and self-reflect with all the time I had and just replay the short-lived life that I've had, I figured it was time for me to start building a legacy. I'm a firm believer in two versions of death. You physically die and then your legacy. So you may physically die, but your legacy may live here forever. Your name always may ring bells. And my role model, rest in peace, Kobe Bryant, I got to see his mental makeup and with everything he did and how he attacked it. So now sitting back and kind of sort of giving back in my own way, I kind of want to perfect my craft. So I started off with one pizza shop. I didn't like how we were doing business. I went to another pizza shop. I built a good rapport with the owners where we have a great collab going on. Also, thank you. I have to mention this. Excuse me. Thank you to Two Brothers Pizza. Without them, none of this is possible. So I definitely want to thank them. I'm grateful for them coming into my life and making this a reality. I would say to anybody that wants to do this, do it, one, for the right reasons. Don't do it for others to applaud you. Don't do it for others to sit back and be like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Do it because it's the right thing to do. Don't do it for likes, social media. None of this matters. These are human beings. They bleed the way we bleed. They need the way we need. It means a lot to me. And once you start it, be committed to it. You know you'll run into obstacles. There'll be highs and lows. There'll be days where you may not feel as if you have enough. And then there's days where you feel like you have more than enough. That doesn't mean stop. Don't become content until you actually see the vision through. So that's the advice I give to anybody in my shoes at this point in time.
Wow, Kai, those are very powerful words and much appreciated. And I know that all of the listeners will take what you just said to heart. So let me just thank you for what you're doing. You know, these are small acts of generosity that can make a big difference. And I suspect that in time, you're going to find, as you continue with this, that this grows into quite a major undertaking, my friend. And if you go on to perfect your art of giving in the same way that you've perfected becoming a basketball player, I know that we can expect great things. So thank you for joining us on this episode, and thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate you very much.
Well, with me now are two women who are going to talk about an interesting program called Deportes Sin Fronteras, located in El Salvador. It is a program that was started by a man by the name of Rolando Ortega, who is a national swim team coach. And he decided that he would begin to gather donations to buy cheap sporting equipment for poor kids in small towns in El Salvador. And like many things that start with a small idea or just a notion to try to help some kids or to help some people, has begun to expand. And Elvia and Pamela are going to talk with us today about how this program has taken off, where it came from, and give us another example of what we all might be able to do with a small act of kindness. So, ladies, welcome to the Heart of Giving podcast.
Thank you, Art.
Thank you.
So, Pamela, first of all, I have to acknowledge with you that we are in pretty high company by having Elvia on the podcast with us. Am I not correct in that she was a star swimmer at one point in your country?
Yes, for a very long time, actually. She was a role model to many young women in our country. And she's a very good example of all the benefits you could get with swimming or any other sport.
Wow, that is grossly overstated. But but I do think that I am very privileged to have had that life, to be part of the national swimming team, to have met Rolando. And I think it speaks to what he's trying to do, that not many of us in El Salvador would have had that chance. And because I did, I want to help him in his efforts.
Well, superstar Elvia, let's talk about this program. And where do you think Rolando got this notion to help kids in the way that he has?
Well, I can tell you, Rolando right now, he's no longer national swim team coach. He was when I was younger. He was an assistant coach, and he was in charge of us kids. I think at that point, I must have been 12 and under or so. So I was a very young kid when I was working with him. And what I can tell you about him is that, yeah, he did support our, you know, swimming, very serious swimming careers, but mostly he brought joy and he brought game and he brought this positivity about sports and what that means in a person's life. And I think out of all the coaches that I've ever interacted with him, that is what I got from him. A love of a discipline, a love of hard work, and that word that can take you in life. But I think all of us, like when I was swimming, I want to say, I might have this wrong, but I think we had two Olympic-sized swimming pools in the country, both in San Salvador. And so many of us were giving it a go, but for many others, it wasn't a possibility. And I think for him, there was a reality that he couldn't look away from. And I had a conversation many years afterwards. I already had my own kids when I was having this conversation with him. And he told me about how he was trying to just buy equipment to teach kids in other towns with not as many resources, but so that they could learn to swim, sometimes in rivers. You know, all he wanted was a little board so that kids can not drown while they were doing it, and that they could have a sense of community and know that people cared about them and maybe be able to, you know, find a love for sports through these activities.
Well, Pamela Elvia is here now in the United States, although I know she enjoys getting back to El Salvador as frequently as possible. But you're there on the ground watching this program on a daily basis, pretty much. What's happening with it? How's it doing? How has it prospered?
Well, it's been really inspiring. I know Rolando because of his swimming career as a coach, because I have many friends that were on the swimming team from El Salvador. So I started to get to know this program, and it seemed like very simple. You know, they're trying to help people, kids, with some equipment so they can start learning not just swimming, but other sports. But then when I got involved in the whole program, it really amazed me how much they're doing. Because it's not only about teaching them how to swim or that they can get just a few footballs or some coaches to teach them. They are trying to get them out of the hard, harsh reality that they live in. Because we are a country not only poor in many areas, but we are in danger of having all our kids not just teens, but kids going into gangs. And that is not only in a certain areas in the country, it is in the whole country. So what they do is that they try to start any program. It started with swimming, but they try to start with any type of sport that can get the kids involved. And they can get out of that reality of the gangs, out of all the conflict that they live day by day. And with all the benefits that you can get through the sports, that they could learn discipline, as Elvia was saying earlier, because Rolando is a very good, very excellent coach in everything. I mean, he knows about techniques that are very impressive. There are techniques that are very, like, specialized that I didn't know that we, in this country, we knew about them. And Rolando has all this knowledge, and he loves to put it not out there, not just for the kids, but to other coaches. So what they're doing is amazing. I just had a few interviews with some of the coaches that he helps, that this association helps. And these people are walking 2 hours each day just to get to a community, just to give them 1 hour of a coaching session. So these kids can have this experience of living in a community that it's not based on gangs, that it's not based on violence. And they're teaching them the discipline, the teamwork, that everything that you need in life, concentrated in one session of a sport.
Wow. You know, I grew up also in a poor community in the United States, in Philadelphia, that was also riddled with gang violence as I was growing up. And sports was a way out for us too. And it's so amazing to hear this repeated, not only here in the United States, but around the world, and now particularly in El Salvador. So I just want to mention that and to agree with you that sports can provide many of those fundamental aspects and character traits that people need to be successful and move them out of dangerous situations like many of these young people are experiencing. So again, now you talked about how this program began. Where is it going?
Well, actually, right now, they have most of the government support, because as the U.S., like, you have the federal and then you have, like, the city's support, right? So right now they have, like, different city support for specific programs, but now the government is giving them some support to giving them, like, credentials so they can support different programs. Like, if someone comes and I'm a rugby coach and I want to start a rugby program, I go to Deportes Sin Fronteras and ask for their help. And it could be the help in technical issues. It could be like having coaches teaching other coaches different techniques to develop the program, or equipment, or the coach per se. It's different types of how Deportes Sin Fronteras can help develop different programs throughout the country. And with the credentials from the government, that makes it easier, because then the program, it can go like to a new level just because it's been coached and trained by Deportes Sin Fronteras.
I was just going to add that I think that's what's been so smart and strategic about the way they've approached it. They started in a really, like you said, Art, a very simple idea that he wanted to just help some kids. But because he did have that insider knowledge, he was able to connect the dots and say, you know, El Salvador has so little facilities. But if he could find a way to use those facilities, it would make a world of difference. And so Rolando started first at the local level, just finding out from what we call the alcaldía, can we use the pool 2 hours a day? Can we use the pool over the weekend when it's not being used? And then he would find a volunteer coach and have him come in and join the kids and all this stuff. And so his ability to first find those little opportunities here and there, and then through time to speak to the National Sports Institute and find accreditation there, has made a huge difference and is really transforming the organization into something that can have a bigger footprint.
So am I hearing that there's some thought about using this program in the United States to help with immigrants?
So what he has expressed is that he would love to find a way. You know, a lot of us are very connected to our communities back in El Salvador. And what he wants to do is find a way to connect with those immigrants so that they can feel empowered and find a way to support kids that are still in El Salvador. And so I would say, you know, maybe 20 years ago, there were a lot of parents here and they had the kids back home. Now a lot of the kids are up here as well, but they still have families down there and they still want their communities to flourish and for kids to have a different reality. And some of them want to ultimately get back home and live in their communities. So I think what Rolando's trying to accomplish kind of as his next dream is to create connections with people who are here who want to help their community better and who want to help the kids that are still back there.
That's wonderful. Well, I am just going to wish you all tremendous opportunity and success with this, because it's, again, very fascinating to me that sports can have such a powerful impact on young people, as it did with me, as it did with you, obviously, Elvia. And we need to uphold any opportunities that we can to move young people forward and to get them out of what I would consider to be dangerous and other situations that hold them back. So my congratulations to you for what you're doing. Elvia, we appreciate how you've taken interest in this, and it looks like this is going to be something that you also stay engaged with here from the United States. So I have pretty high expectations now. So again, congratulations.
Oh my gosh. Well, all the credit is Rolando's. And I think, like all the other inspirational stories that you're sharing, it's just that his positivity and his intent is so contagious. And our trust in him is so large that many of us, like Pamela or myself or some of the coaches, are happy to support him. So we'll do what we can.
Well, Pamela, thank you for joining the Heart of Giving podcast. And we wish you great success with everything that you're doing.
Thank you. And thank you for the opportunity to talk about Deportes Sin Fronteras.
Wonderful. This is the Heart of Giving podcast. I'm Art Taylor, the host. Please listen to us and subscribe on all major podcast platforms. Thank you.
You've just listened to the Heart of Giving podcast with Art Taylor. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To listen to our other interviews, visit heartgiving.podbean.com. That's heartgiving.podbean.com. Subscribe to our show on major podcast platforms. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guests, not those of the BBB Wise Giving Alliance or program affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Podbean's terms of service.